The following is a paid presentation. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of Shiawassee Radio.
This is your cell. This is your bunk.
This is the Jail Visit on Shiawassee Radio, live from the Cofield Oil and Propane Studios. Here's attorney Bill Amadeo.
All right, we are live. I am putting the volume on. All right. Bill Amadeo from Manus Amadeo and Grable and Associates. And today, we are behind on the content, man. There has been a lot of travel and chaos lately. But today, we gotta get more content done. So I'm gonna say a couple farewells to people that passed away, unfortunately. I wanna tell you about extradition drama. Good times there. Old school birthday parties. That didn't work out well. And St. Patrick's Day memories. My God, what a bunch. Oh, St. Patrick's Day. An excuse for idiots to get drunk. No offense if you're one of them. First of all, Donna McNeilan from the Innocence Project at Cooley has passed away. Great woman. She'll be missed. She definitely was somebody I admired in the criminal law field, and she really gave her life to criminal law. Truly great mentor. Taken from this world way too soon. And a couple days ago was Scotty Zolber's birthday. Man. You know, when it comes to Scott Zolber, I cannot say enough good things. I really can't. And he was taken from us way too early, but truly one of the closest friends I've ever had. Truly a good man. Miss Scott a lot. Now, let's talk about extradition and birthday parties. I gotta tell you. Jewel and I are watching a movie. And this kid has a birthday party. And nobody comes to the birthday party. And it brought back a lot of memories. When I was a child, birthdays were really important to my mother. My mom, she celebrated my birthday like none other. And one year, we threw this party, and nobody came. And I was hurt, but I realized the people there were assholes, right? I mean, I don't ever think I want to fit in South Jersey, but it really hurt my mother. She just wanted to bring joy to me. And here I am, this 12-year-old kid, and I'm sure the Mike Chates of the world and all these other idiots told people not to come to my party. And I don't know, it was something, and for a child to be excited about a birthday party and for nobody to come, that sucks. But, you know, I kind of felt like, well, look at me today. But then I had a call. And I will say, the attempt of the person on the other end of the call tried to bring me back to when nobody was coming to my birthday party. And it was really interesting. For you guys that don't know what extradition is, that is when a client is picked up in another state and there's a warrant for them in your home state. And they extradite the person. And I had an extradition issue in Kentucky. And it's weird. I got a few extradition cases. But this Kentucky call, this was fascinating. And I was like going to scream at the person on the phone, hey, did you Google me or something? It was really weird, man. But let me break it down. I'm trying to get information on a client. And I call this jail. How you doing? I'm William Amadeo, attorney in Michigan, P76194. Can you tell me information on Joe Smith? Who are you? I'm like, William Amadeo, whatever. And then you went from person to person to person, and all of them with this strong southern accent. And they are really, you get the wrong people in Kentucky. I mean, I'll tell you, there's a level of racism there, man. They thought I was Hispanic and, or a Yankee, as I was told. And this female dispatcher's on the phone. And I'm sitting there as she's talking shit to me. I said, "Hi, can I please find out some information about my client? We want to waive extradition, get him back to Michigan, and fight the case." "Let me tell you something, boy." And I'm like, "Huh. We don't really care for you Spanish lawyers coming in and telling us how to run our state." Now, it was interesting. Because I said, "Wow, that's kind of messed up. By the way, I'm Italian. Amedeo." And we went into this whole thing. And now I'm telling someone my life story. Well, actually, I'm glad you asked. My mom's side from Rome. My father's side from Bologna. We are Italian. And this infuriated her. "Well, I'm not going to talk to some Yankee who's trying to get some scumbag back to Michigan." And I'm going back and forth. Like, okay, don't talk shit about my client. And this woman and I are screaming at each other. And like people in the office are looking at me like, "Who are you talking to?" And I'm putting it on speaker and I'm recording it. And it just got out of control. But I will tell you something. You catch the wrong person on a Kentucky extradition, you will be called names that you have not even heard of. And I appreciate that. I got the recording there. I also got recorded with some other prosecutors who threatened me before and now are shitting in their bricks. That's either here or there. Let's get into St. Patrick's Day. Oh my God. You know, as a kid, St. Patrick's Day was interesting. Growing up a strong Catholic, there is a division in the Catholic Church. Let me break it down for you guys. We have our Italian Catholics. That was us. Woohoo. We got our Irish Catholics. And then you got your Hispanic Catholics. So the Hispanic Catholics, they kind of went to church, stuck together. The Irish Catholics. Right, John Granger? The Irish Catholics, they were very cocky. And they drank a ton. And the Italian Catholics, the funny thing about the Italian Catholics were, you could commit a crime, but you're good as long as you go to confession. And to me, my fear was, huh, so I knew some of the shit the Italian guys were doing. I'm like, "Oh, well, I'd be careful in confession with that priest, because he gets a little too much soda, bread, and whiskey, and he's going to tell the whole world." And I was right. So there was this battle. And Father Sullivan, he was our pastor. And he was always, St. Patrick's Day would come up. And boy, for a week ahead, he'd be bragging, "Oh, I'm making the soda bread. And we got our Irish whiskey. And I'm going to have Bushmills and Irish coffee. And screw you, Amadego." And I was wondering, like, what's this asshole so pissed off at me for? Because my family's from Italy. But okay. So I get annoyed. And I remember Linda McDevitt. What's up, Mark? Linda McDevitt was my 8th grade teacher. I couldn't stand that woman. And if she tunes in, "Linda, I didn't like you then. I don't like you now." Quote me. We had to do an essay. And at this point, I mean, Linda McDevitt tells me I'm an idiot. Sullivan's just an asshole. The Golden Boys with Chris Kramer and Mike Chait. It was like a caste system of just assholes in general. And we had this essay due. Hey, Lorraine. And what I did was, I went to Mo. Mo Petroni was my next door neighbor. Great man. Hey, Scott. And Mo had these encyclopedias. So we had to write an essay on St. Patrick. And in this encyclopedia, I found out that St. Patrick was actually Italian. Now, let me tell you something, guys. In this Irish Catholic grammar school, for me to profess that St. Patrick was Italian. These people were furious. Linda McDevitt's pissed off. Sullivan, he's angry. And I knew they were going to call me out on it. The Italian kid's the liar. And in what I feel was like my first ever exhibit in court, foreshadowing it was going to come later in life, Mo allowed me to bring his large encyclopedia. And I'm like carrying this encyclopedia in my book bags on the Atlantic City Transit, New Jersey Transit bus. And I'm waiting for them to call me out. And I pulled up this encyclopedia and I showed them that St. Patrick was a fucking Dago, not a Mick. Holy shit! And you know, it was kind of like telling someone to go fuck themselves. You know, like when a coach gets a technical foul on purpose? That's where I was with St. James. I mean, I couldn't stand those people. I just like them more than I do today. People say you look back on grammar school and high school with joy. Let me tell you, I didn't. They were pieces of shit. And it brought me so much joy to prove to them that St. Patrick, like myself, was a Dago. Good times. Now, as we got older, St. Patrick's Day took on a whole new flavor. Today, I always appreciate St. Patrick's Day because when I was younger in my career, trying to generate clients, it was always great for drug possession and drinking and driving cases. I mean, you always had a flurry after St. Patrick's Day. And you would tell people you knew, hey, this is amateur hour. Do not do anything stupid on St. Patrick's Day. It's the way for cops to make their quotas. New Jersey never learned that. Hey, Jason Whitney. So, one St. Patrick's Day, back in Jersey, there was a girl. Was absolutely crazy about her. Oh, thank God. That didn't work out. Never would have had Jewel. Probably would have been divorced. I definitely would have been divorced. But we broke up on St. Patrick's Day. And let me tell you why. She wanted to go to the Chelsea pub after work. Now, back in Jersey, the Chelsea pub was the bar of the Tropicana employees. And all sorts of shit happened at the Chelsea. I mean, this was a greasy spoon if there ever was a goddamn greasy spoon. And it was a place for drugs and adultery. All sorts of shit happened in the 90s at the Chelsea pub. And I am studying for the LSAT. And this girl says to me, it's St. Patrick's Day. You are going to study for your LSAT today. Instead of coming out and get drunk with us. Now, I don't drink. I always bought people drinks. And I people watched. Like, it's an amazing thing. If you've never done this, be the sober guy at the bar. Holy shit. Buy people drinks and study them as they're getting intoxicated. And as somebody told me back in Jersey, a little bit of liquor comes in, a little bit of truth comes out. People will tell you how they really feel about you after their third shot. You will find out who wants to burn you to the ground. You will find out who's always been in love with you. You will find out who is suicidal. And you will find out who's dangerous to society. That all comes from buying people liquor. Never had a drink in my life. But I will tell you, I have bartended. And there's nothing quite as fascinating as watching somebody get drunk and telling you their life story. And you do this with lawyers, by the way. I shouldn't tell this one, but there's nothing as much as a prosecutor I don't like, and I see them out of the bar, I definitely buy them a bottle, and then I go talk to them. So what do you think of that Jones case? You'd be amazed how much shit they give up to you. Neither here nor there. Anyway, back to the Tropicana thing. So she wants me to go to the Chelsea. I never liked going to the Chelsea. And the Chelsea on St. Patrick's Day, that to me was like the third layer of hell. Because idiots would use this as an excuse to really get drunk. And they're drinking their green beer. And let me tell you, they would drink for like 14 hours straight. So I tell her, "Hey, I'm not going to the Chelsea. When I get done, I'm going to go home and study." She's all pissed off. So what happened is one night, she's going to party with her friends, do God knows what. There was a call out at work, and they needed somebody to work. I was working 3 to 11, and then the bartender for kitchen service south, which was 11 p.m. to 7 in the morning, called out of work. Now, kitchen service south back then, that was like a dead zone. Nothing ever happened. The restaurant was dead. You were making very few drinks, maybe doing some room service orders, but it was really few and far in between. So I worked the overtime, and I brought my LSAT books with me, and I was studying. Because kitchen service south, while everything was in reverse, it was an amazing time to get 3 or 4 good hours of studying done. Catching up with some good books, listening to some good music, whatever. So when she found out that not only did I refuse to go, I volunteered for overtime to make money and study, she lost it. And she said to me, "You will never get anywhere in life because you don't know how to relax. We're done." And I just, okay. That was the end of that. But it's funny. I just remember this group of people at the Chelsea laughing at me because I was going to work overtime and study. Gotta tell you, they were drinking their green beer, puking their brains out, doing lines of cocaine. And I was studying in the service bar working 16 hours. And I was mocked. And, I don't know, guys. You tell me what the score is now. Anyway.
The jail visit with attorney Bill Amadeo from McManus and Amadeo. Connect with McManus and Amadeo at McManusAmadeo.com or call 800-392-7311. This is The Jail Visit on Shiawassee Radio.
The song, you ever hear the song Africa by Toto? I miss the rain, South Africa. You gotta hear Weezer's version of it. Weezer kills. That song is like awesome. And I was at dinner the other night with Josh Champline and the Iberas, and they told me how much Kelsey Kells loves that song Africa. And I sent the cover, and I hope you enjoy it. It's a great track. You know, I was gonna do that coming in tonight, but you know, we didn't have enough time. We just haven't stopped working. I worked more than you today.
Just about.
Just about, yeah. All right. Yeah, I'm just, my brain is so fried right now. You know, yesterday I had a PCC in Chi-Town at 8 o'clock. 8:15, actually. Then I had to go do a Zoom for Washington. And the Zoom judge was 4 hours late. So I had to get somebody to finish the Zoom from the hotel, and I drove in the snow to Oakland County. Then I came back here to do work. I didn't see you.
Yeah.
You don't have this. All right.
How's working?
All right. Prelims, the preliminary examination, rejections and breakups, and it's weird how they all come together. All right. In my career, I have won nine prelims. Not the six. I'm doing a nine here, and I think that is more than most people ever would, because you don't win prelims.
Nope.
Prelims are usually a waste of time. So often do I, Megan Smith, almost 10, almost Meg. We should have done that one. We should have won that one, but you know, I'm glad it worked out for everybody involved. Wink, wink. Anyway, she gets the joke.
Yeah.
You know what a prelim is like? And this is the reason why prelims and breakups and rejections were all put together. Here's my view of prelim, guys. A prelim is you arguing to the judge, who has to have a probable cause standard, right? Here's what you're really doing. You're arguing about why the breakup went wrong. But you're arguing it to your ex-girlfriend's best friend.
Yeah.
The judge will be like, and the district court judge, remember now, they are the best friend of your ex. So they can do a couple things. If you really wooed them somehow and they got enough courage to kick it, they'll say, "Holy shit, Bill was right for dumping her." But how often is that going to happen? Is she going to go out with her girl? No. So what they can do is get really pissed off at you and say, "Well, since you talk shit about your ex, I'm going to amend charges. I'm taking that CSC4 to a CSC2. Or I'm going to revoke bond. How dare you run a prelim?" It takes a lot of courage for a district court judge to actually objectively say, "This is bullshit." And I say, it's happened 9 times in my life, which is, and I feel there's a lot of value in waiving preliminary examinations. Every case is different, right? This is not a one size fits all thing, but you know, I've gotten some amazing deals and dismissals on things that I've waived. Every county is different, though. Like in Wayne County, they run the prelim, which blows me away. Okay. So you're going to put this kid on the stand, and they got to go through a cross-examination. And it's weird because some defense lawyers, and Meg, you could attest to this, when we got to run a prelim or we decide to run one, we're trying to get a few cohesive points. Some of these guys are just going to beat up alleged victims. It's like some of the guys I see that are the toughest at the prelims, like screaming at children, are ones that they must not have gotten laid in high school. My God. Jesus, like it's their chance to be the big man on campus. I saw a guy the other day like scream at this child. And like, what are you, hey, how are you helping your client here? I've always said this when people ask me about therapy dogs and stuff. I'm a big fan of therapy dogs because the complaining witnesses, they are not the only ones that need a therapy dog. When I'm done with the cop, he or she will need a therapy dog. So, you know, and I'll tell you, man, it's been a fascinating ride lately. I hear some people the Attorney General's office are talking shit about. Jesus, that just hurts. You know, you try to make friends. I don't get it. I know, I'm sorry that I'm working hard and filing important motions.
Yeah, I can't do that.
Jesus, my God. I mean, should we get punished for doing our job? Well, that's up to the prelim. Think about it. Think of it like this, young lawyers. The prelim is you screaming at your ex's best friend why the relationship went sour. They're probably going to take their best friend's side. Doesn't really, you know, that's where we're at. Which leads me to rejections and breakups. I gotta tell you, oh I gotta be careful here, right?
Well,
A little bit, because we're not gonna name names,
no.
but we're going to talk about circumstances. And again, I got to the gym at the ass crack of dawn. I have not stopped working. The live audience has not stopped working. My brain is fried, the filter is off, and you know, this filter, when it's on, is dangerous. But imagine being off. My God. So I start thinking about people from the past. I started thinking about, started thinking about some things. And I want to first talk about New Jersey. Rejections in Jersey back in the day. It's really weird. I've always been extremely arrogant in my looks. I probably think I'm better than I am, but I always know from my brains I'm like friggin' Brad Pitt because nobody this smart could actually be attractive. So I kind of play that angle. It's always worked for me. But in Jersey, you'd be surprised how intellectual ability could work against you, especially working in the casino. It's like these weird cliques. And I go back to high school. In high school, we learned you could be rejected in person, but behind closed doors, things got really interesting. That was the Margate girls. So the Margate girls, they were these rich girls from the suburbs, right? And Scott Grable actually did better with the Margate women than I did in person. But Scott, I will tell you, behind closed doors, I think I may have been more successful with them. So what would happen with the Margate girls where they would not go to the prom with you? now you're a white kid from the hood. They would not go to the dances with you, but they would come by the hood to see you. And I learned something in life right there about the image and substance. I mean, do we really know who we really like? How often in this whole weird scheme of dating do these people, do they date people they really like? Or, I mean, they're just trying to fit in with what society tells them to do. I gotta tell you, I saw so many more gay girls marry within their own social economic status, but come to the hood, hook up with the guys they really liked. It was funny. And at Atlanta Community College, there were these intellectual girls, or so they thought. I remember this girl rejected me at ACC. Now, she said how she was so brilliant that she had to date somebody on her level. This is the odd thing, because she was at community college. So how brilliant could we be? Let me rephrase that. I went to community college because I was going to play travel baseball and catch a scout from the Phillies' eyes. As you can tell, that may not have worked out. That was my plan. I gotta tell you, man, there were some people at community college that were, like, they had this inflated ego. I got an A in my humanities course, taught by the drug addict who just got out of rehab or a mental institution in New Jersey. College was different, because college rejections were fascinating. You had the sorority girls that only date sorority guys, and then years after the fact, maybe they want to sue them.
That's good. That wouldn't happen.
We will not. How dare you have consensual sex and not be able to sue for millions of dollars? That's just messed up. I got totally off topic there. The casino rejections were fascinating. These were the cocktail. I know, Meg. I know. Megan Smith says too soon.
She's smart.
Casino rejections were interesting. I date a lot of cocktail waitresses. But there were some that really thought they were God's gift to the world. Here's what I could say. Rejections in my youth, I am so grateful, because some of those girls I like, holy shit. Look at their Facebook photos today. I mean, their beauty and intellect is rivaling each other, and they were pretty dumb back then. You know? I digress. I will say this, though. Once I won my first capital case and started making a lot of money, I became a lot more attractive to people that rejected me in my youth. What was that song by Bowling for Soup? This one goes out to my good friends, especially the ones before the Grammy nomination in 2003. Oh, my God. Guys, listen, I was always weird. It's just now that I'm successful, I could say shit and people hang on my every word. Which leads us to breakups. I got some good ones here, man. In Lansing once, a girl broke up with me because she wanted to date a guy who was a better softball player. I gotta tell you, Lansing softball. Okay, so here's what's going on. I'm tutoring full-time, and I'm playing softball every night. And I'm supporting Aunt Mare. This had to be the worst time of my life as far as I got all these bar licenses, and I'm supporting my aunt with this bullshit tutoring. And I'm playing softball with these morons. And this was their world, man. I mean, I saw guys come out to softball fields with boomboxes like it's 1989. And these idiots, the one thing they understood. And by the way, some of you guys, I love you. But some of you were morons. And the one thing they understood, there were two laws that the softball guys really embraced. Number one, they knew the age of consent in Michigan was 16. Because I would see a lot of like high school sophomores dating the 40-year-old factory workers that were dealing pot on the side. They knew that was legal. And number two, they knew about marijuana legislation. There were more pot cards in Lansing softball. Oh, I broke a toenail. I need a pot card. And
there was this girl I was dating at a horrible time in my life, and she told me, like, I really like you, but Tim is a better softball player than you. He led the league in home runs. And I was like, holy shit. So he was keeping stats out there. My favorite breakup, though, there was a girl in law school. I was crazy about this girl. And now she's probably tuned in under somebody else's name right now. Yeah. I had this dream. And, like, in law school, you kind of kept your private life private. Well, it worked well. But she was it. I was just into her, man. I was head over heels, if you would. At least you thought. And she goes to her externship out of state. And she kept saying to me, well, look, B, I'm going to my externship. And I realized what this meant now. Like, she was going to find a rich older guy at the externship. And there was a guy who was like 25, 30 years older than her. She broke up the marriage. She ended up with him. And that was the one that said, he's my Manhattan Shore thing, but you're my Atlantic City crapshoot. And that breakup was fascinating. Because her husband today, who was that old guy, that was the blue pill commentary, right? So, instead of just saying, okay, I bought your girl, he tried to screw me up with the New Jersey Board of Bar Examiners. And I will tell you, that did not go well with my crazy family. You didn't know, may Mary Lee Neary and Gloria Neary rest in peace, but I will tell you something. My family, God, do I love them. But if you think I'm a little off kilter at times, you didn't meet the women that raised me. They weren't really the most reasonable people, and my ex's boyfriend at the time and future husband learned that they were serious when they made certain comments on the phone. And so that breakup, that was interesting. Another breakup we had, which was really cool, is when I was my last year in Atlantic City. And I'm going off to law school. And I'm seeing this girl. Nobody really knows about it. Because in the casino industry, when you're seeing somebody, somebody else knows about it, their goal is to cease and destroy. And it was like high school on steroids. Tropicana, I will tell you this as a bartender, I learned more behind the bar than I ever learned studying for the bar. Trust me on this one. And this girl had a really interesting life. She told me she was married, but they were separated. I took her at her word. Sure, okay, whatever. Hey, you're separated. I understand. Things happen. We're seeing each other. And I had this condo across from Tropicana. Little tiny condo. And it was a gated community. You had to have a code to get in, which really didn't work well for me this night. So, it turns out her husband and her were not separated. And he wanted to discuss my relationship with her. So, I hear this pound on the glass. And he was hitting his gun against the glass. I'm like, And I'm like, huh. Well, you know, I gotta tell you. When a guy brings a gun up to your condo, and you are unarmed, this is not good. And I figured, well, I'm not going to call the police. And you kind of like you put the volume on the TV real loud, hoping he just goes away. But that wasn't going to happen either. So he's calling my cell phone. And he basically says to me, if you don't let me in, I'm just going to shoot the door open. At that point, I go, well, I'm going to let you in. Because I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to at least try to talk my way out of this shit, right? This is not good. Kids at home, if you never had a gun put to your head, don't try it. It's not a good time. And while I enjoyed my time with her here and there, I really thought maybe time to break up at this point, right?
Yeah.
So he puts this gun to my ear, And it was really a weird thing. Like, he puts on, like, MTV, and he's kind of, like, dancing as this gun's going. Like, oh, my God. Am I going to end like this? Because I was hooking up with some girl who lied about being married while this guy's dancing to MTV in my condo, and I'm, like, 3 weeks from law school. This is not a good made-for-lifetime movie. Yeah. Right? Okay. Like, how do I get out of this shit? So the first thing he wants... it's for me never to see her again. Okay. All right. Can we agree? What can I do to put you in this car today? You know, if we break up right now, I'll call her and say we're done. Will you take that gun out of my face? He wanted a little more. He wanted reassurance that she wasn't seeing anybody else. Now, this is where psychology comes into play. Number one. I really assumed she was separated. Because when I started talking to her, I knew there were at least two other guys she was talking to at the same time. So she wasn't just hooking up with me. She was playing the field in the Tropicana bartender seniority list. I had the lowest seniority number, which meant I was the youngest of the crew. Bad for seniority, but good for attracting the opposite sex at the time. I don't know what to tell him. She's loyal to you, man. This went on for a couple hours. I mean, the dude, he's sweating. He's got the gun in my face. He's dancing to MTV. I am, like, shitting myself right now. And I end up chatting with him and talking to him and convincing him how they really have something special they need to work on. And, I believe in you, and I didn't understand the ramifications of the situation. You got to be careful in that situation. You can't just come off the, over the top, right? Look, dude, she's a crazy liar. She told me you were separated. It's not me. No. He's in love with her so much to the point that he's willing to risk life in prison. And you're sitting there with this gun in your face. Oh, God, dude. So, after he left, we shook hands. I gave him a Gatorade, which I always remember that. You know, because you're looking for anything to talk about at this point. Hey, so, what do you think of Lemon Lime Gatorade? I like it. Well, I have some in the fridge. May I offer you one? Took the Gatorade, puts the gun down. He's still dancing on MTV. He's clearly high. We shook hands, and he left. And I never saw her again. My choice. And she tried to get back with me, but I gotta tell you. Sir, point well taken. That was the most interesting breakup in Atlantic City. Dude, I mean... another weird breakup happened during my time at Cooley. There was someone who, let's just say they were in the administration at Cooley. Let's leave it at that. And now, she really shouldn't be dating a student. It's a bad look. And I am dating other law students at the time. And one night, she comes to the Village Green Apartments. You gotta understand about Village Green, man. That was like a law school ghetto. Okay? That was like, Mike, the Gatorade helped, man. I didn't have cherry in there. I had one line more. So, here's this administrator who's a very high up at the law school at the time. And she's banging down my door 9 o'clock at night on a Friday. And I don't know. It just wasn't a good look. And I explained to her, hey, you know, everybody in my hallway is a Cooley student. Do you think you should be at my apartment right now? And she told me, and these were words to live by, you little son of a bitch. I'm a woman first. Don't you ever forget that. Okay. I figured with this one, like, you know, and when you break up with somebody who's crazy, let me help you out here. You gotta make it their idea. Obviously, the gun to the head. Wow. It was his idea, and I co-signed on that one.
But when somebody like that comes in your world and you engage with them, you've got to make it their idea. I'd really love to be with you, but I understand I'm not good enough for you. I mean, I think I'm good enough for anybody. But I mean, you know, in those situations, I don't have these issues anymore, obviously, right. But you know, I mean, Kara overlooked a lot of shit. You know, I mean, she's clearly the stable one in our relationship.
Obviously.
Oh, man. I hope Max gets Kara's level of reasonableness. You know, I hope he gets my work ethic and her looks and, like, demeanor. Because that'd be good. Because,
yeah.
I mean, we don't need two Bill Amadeus right now. But, yeah, you got to make it their idea. And that leads me to one more breakup. And this chick was beautiful, but cray cray times 10. And Mike, you know what I'm talking about right now, right? Okay. So, ironically, she was a cop. And she was the type of female cop who had to really be in control of everything. She was a cop, and then she was a CO. Badass chick. Beautiful, badass. But, like, if you went to a restaurant, she could never sit with her back to the door. She was really, you know, we'd be eating dinner. Turn around! Like, okay. Whatever. I mean, at that point, I mean, she could say whatever she wanted. I was just infatuated with her physical appearance, but the mental got a little crazy. You know, remember once I was studying in the library, and I put my phone on silent, and she called me. I had like 4 missed calls. So I get out of the library. Oh, hey, what's going on? You son of a bitch. I called you 4 times. Don't think I can't plant drugs on you. Huh. Well, that wouldn't be good for character and fitness now, would it? When she threatened to put the drugs on me if I didn't answer the call immediately, that was fun. Because now I'm saying, well, I wasn't even doing it behind her back. I was just studying. But this chick was, you didn't play with her. So now at this point, this is when the medicine man comes out and the flag is Russian red circa 1985 and it's waving in the air. Hey, B, you gotta get the hell out of here, right? And of course, she's so pretty, you overlooked it for a little while. Then you're like doing this balancing test. It's the risk utility test of socialization. You're weighing the looks versus the mental instability. And, okay, you're trying to, like, analyze this. Like, how do I get out of this? And one day, you realize the only way I'm going to escape this nut before I leave the area would be that she has to become interested in somebody else. So what do? Well, you pick somebody for her to go with. You don't tell him, you don't tell her. So there was this one guy, went to law school with him. Didn't really like him. He didn't like this guy, he was an asshole. And he was cocky as hell. I get any woman, I could do this, I could do that. He really wasn't all that talented or attractive, but he thought he was. And I said to him one day, hey, let me show you a picture of the girl I'm dating. And I said, what do you think of her, huh? He goes, oh, wow, she's beautiful. I'm like, she is. She really is. Actually, I'm meeting her. Why don't you join us? Joins us. So at this dinner with these two narcissistic people, I mean, this is a crazy beautiful woman with a badge and gun, and this guy thinks he's going to light the world on fire, which, by the way, he certainly is lighting the world on fire if trying to get a little bit of court appointed work is doing such. And I am setting this thing in motion. I'm buying them drinks. I don't have pot to piss in back then. But I'm going to invest in this night because I got to tell you, I got to get rid of her. I need to make her somebody else's problem. So I'm sitting there at this dinner with this guy I can't stand and this girl I'm trying to get rid of. I'm like, you know,
You're one of the few people I think is going to be a better litigator than me. Because, well, thank you for noticing. I said to her, he is amazing. I gotta tell you, I was insecure to even put you together. I said, because I'm a pretty confident guy, but he's clearly the better looking, more talented guy here. I mean, I can't imagine if he had a if you had met him first, we wouldn't be together right now. She's going, like, All right. Wasn't long after that that she and I'm dissing myself, right? I'm doing stuff like weird stuff. Like, hey, don't call me 8 o'clock at night. I just got out of work, so I'd call like 8 o'clock and be like, oh, hey, I'm sorry, I forgot you told me not to do that. Like, can I make myself as unappealing as possible? She hated guys with facial hair, so I grew a beard briefly. I mean, I am like pulling it out, man. We are digging deep into the playbook. And I keep putting situations where those two get together. Eventually, she tells me it's not working. Like, oh no! I knew I never should have put you guys together at dinner that night. But, you know, you deserve the best, and he's a great guy. Shoo! Out the door. And that, they were together for a while, and didn't really work out great, but I, you know, cleared the way for me to leave a good situation. So, all right. Well, now that they're convinced that a competency may be ordered for me, I'm Bill Amadeo. And I got to tell you, I co-signed everything I said tonight. No regrets.
The Jail Visit with attorney Bill Amadeo from McManus and Amadeo. Connect with McManus and Amadeo at McManusAmadeo.com or call 800-392-7311. This is The Jail Visit on Shiawassee Radio.
It is weird, right? Man. DHHS drama in Lenawee. So weird when I'm prosecuting a case, right? That was interesting. One of my favorite courts, but just feels like it's the opposite day. I know I got some friends out there that are going through some serious stuff right now, and I'm hoping to bring a little lighthearted humor to you tonight. About this volleyball tournament when I was a teenager. Let's kick it back to New Jersey in the 90s, and I'm a kid. And one of the things we would do when I got my first car, I drove before I had a driver's license. So Scott Grable, you can now report me to Ventnor for not only lying about my address, for driving illegally in Jersey. And I got my money together. I get this old beat-up Camaro. And that Camaro was my way out of the ghetto when it ran. And one of the places you would go to was Brigantine. Brigantine is where volleyball tourneys lived in South Jersey back then. And people would come from all over to go to Brigantine. I never liked Brigantine per se. I used to say there was one way in and one way out of Brigantine. You had to go over that big bridge. Fun fact about Brigantine, the second windiest city in the country next to Chicago. And Brigantine was just a weird place. And Brigantine had these crazy cliques. And Brigantine was really like, there was a rich part of Brigantine, and there was a really dirt poor part of Brigantine. And at AC High, the Atlantic City and Brigantine kids went one way. Ventnor Market kids went the other way. The kids that were the brains in Brigantine, the Jeff Goldmans, the Sean Daly's, they had such a chip on their shoulder. They thought they were better than you, which, whatever. That's a story for another time. But Brigantine, to me, I used to escape there to go play volleyball. And it was weird. Despite being short, always been short, I was a pretty good beach volleyball player. And I was never a good leaper at basketball, but for whatever reason, on sand, I could get up pretty high. It was very weird how that worked out. And there's this big tournament coming up. We had to pay X amount of dollars to be in this tournament, and the best of the best were going to be there. And it was kind of a foregone conclusion who was going to win this tournament. There were these two giant guys. Let's just call them Mike and Joe. Mike and Joe were the California blonde-looking dudes, right? 6'4", 6'5", Twin Towers, and they were going to dominate the volleyball scene. They came in. These are the guys that didn't work, smoked weed, drank beer, hooked up with hot South Jersey girls. Their life was volleyball. And they had a chance to go pro. And I'm going to tell you, this day literally destroyed one of their pro careers. And I played a role in that. So, what I would do, and let's back it up. Volleyball in Brigantine was kind of sacred, right? And there were tournaments all the time, but there were these volleyball courts that were open 24 hours a day. So you could get a game at midnight sometimes. What I used to do after working my little job was I would drive to Brigantine. And didn't have much money back then. You guys know the baseball card drama. But I would have... Thank you, Mike. I would have... By the way, Mike, that check was mailed today. So Schwartz Creek Little League, great calls. We should all get behind that. I would have a bunch of volleyballs, right? What I would do, I saved up for these volleyballs, is I would just practice my serves late at night. I'd go there. And one night, these two stars were with their hot girlfriends. And I'm sitting there alone at 16, 17 years old, working on my serve. Now, as you can imagine, the 5'6" kid from the hood coming to Brigantine to work on a serve at midnight after working a minimum wage job, I was the butt of some jokes. And as you also know, sometimes jokes don't go over well with me, and sometimes they do. It depends who's delivering them, right? So this one asshole, he's laughing at me about my serves. He goes, "Oh, is that going to help you get taller?" And his girlfriend is laughing, and they're giggling as they're stumbling on the Brigantine beach. And I'm thinking to myself, one day, asshole, one day, I'll be better than you in every way. But it wasn't going to be tonight. And I keep practicing and practicing and practicing. So, you know, and I'll say, these two guys were amazing. They were amazing volleyball players. Credit where credit's due. And when they would spike, man, it came down you hard. Like, if you were digging, and a dig is, like, banging it out when somebody hits a serve, hits a spike on you, it would bang your arms hard. Like, there'd be a dent on the ball. And this big tourney's coming up. I'm not good enough to play in this tourney. I was a hardworking volleyball player. And the guy that was my partner, he was working. And, you know, I was literally going to go to this tournament and watch. That's what I was going to do. And there's this older guy, 23, seemed older now. Now it would be a kid today. And his partner backed down. He paid the admission fee. And he saw me play late at night. And he goes, "Hey, I know you play a lot. Do you want to be my partner today?" And I got to tell you, there's something about this. Sometimes just being thrown into the moment works. Just sometimes it does. Now, ways to think about that. If I had been prepping all week for that tournament, I may not have been on my game. But here I am. To me, there was no pressure at all. I'm the smallest guy. That's right, Josh, the Karch Karai Jumpster, which I tried unsuccessfully, but I tried that for years. I'm the small guy on the court. And this guy asked me to play with him. Well, yeah, what the hell? Now, there were like 64 teams, and they went from 1 to 64, just assuming everybody would win, and then the tourney would flip, and it was like March Madness in a way. And we're the last seed. And those two blonde guys are the first seed. And they're laughing as they're warming up. And I'm thinking to myself, shit. Part of me is like, this is my chance to stick it up their ass. Another part of me is like, oh well, if I lose, I'm supposed to lose. So I'm warming up with my partner, and I see one of the blonde guy's girlfriend. She had long red hair,
And she's sitting on the beach reading the Executioner's Song. Now, at this point in my life, I'm 17, 16, 17. She's like 22. So you think like she's like the hot older girl, right? That's what you're thinking at this point. And I see her reading this book. And it's a book I had intimate knowledge of. And I want to get into this asshole's head. He's mocking me on the beach. He thinks he's God's gift to the world. And I go up to her and I said, "Hey, Executioner's Song, huh? Let's do it." And I wink. And she said, "What?" So you know what Gary Gilmore said before he got shot the firing squad? "Let's do it." Nike stole that. And she says to me, "You know who Gary Gilmore is?" Let me back it up. She was a history major from a college. Gary Gilmore was the guy that brought the death penalty back to America. And I read book after book about Gary Gilmore. The Executioner's Song by Norman Mailer was the quintessential book on Gary Gilmore. And I'm going up to this older chick and I'm telling her I know about this book. And I'm making these jokes, Gibbs and Gilmore. That was about the undercover agent trying to get information on Gary Gilmore. And she is fascinated. We're talking about Ben Bushnell and Max Jensen, the two guys that Gary Gilmore killed to get to the firing squad. And California boy is watching me and her go at it. And he says to her, "You told this little bitch?" And I said to him, "I don't know. Maybe I know more about Norman Mailer's books than you do, huh, big guy?" And he's pissed. And he's losing it. And I'm thinking to myself, I can't beat this guy one-on-one. I can't. He's 6'5", I'm 5'6". He's got a serve to hurt. He's got a spike to cause injuries. But I'm going to connect with his girlfriend about this piece of literature and mess with his head. And mess with his head I did. At this tournament, it was best of five. So it was a race to three, as they called it in Brigantine. And this guy, she's looking at me and reading her book, and he is off his game. And this was something I learned about life. Getting inside people's heads can lead to advantageous things. It's like calling an opposing counsel extremely unattractive or stupid when they really are, and making them realize they are. So I get into this person's head. His spike is off. He's serving the ball out of balance. We're beating him. We take him out. He's done. And he was never the same again. You tracked him, and he simply never made it to the pros. And that tournament was his downfall. And I think to myself, if the asshole would have just let me hit my balls in the dark at Brigantine instead of making a joke, maybe he would have had a professional career. Because that day, he lost the girl, he lost the tournament. Everything was falling apart for him because he had to mock me when I was playing volleyball by myself. So, dude, if you're out there, you could blame me for that. I didn't start this shit. Anyway, they're fighting the whole time, and it became like this very bizarre thing because the other teams are watching. Now guys are thinking this girl's available. They're literally having this screaming match, and everybody was thrown off. And me and my partner, we just kept surviving and advancing, as you would put it. We won the next round, and the next round, and the next round. Finally, we get to the finals. And we're playing this other team from Florida. And this team is bigger, stronger, and faster. And me and my friend are here. I'm like, you know what? We weren't even supposed to be here today. Let's just go out there and do this shit. And I want the lesson from this is sometimes in life, just because on paper somebody looks more powerful than you doesn't mean shit. We went out there, and it was a race to three again. And we won 3-2. And it was historic by South Jersey volleyball standards then. This 5'6 teenager and this 23-year-old guy with no experience went in there and beat the best of the best in this tournament. And it all started because some asshole was mocking me in the middle of the night. His girlfriend had a knack to read Norman Mailer books, and I knew enough about Gary Gilmore to basically stick it up their ass. So, another thing that happened that always stuck with me was there's this band called Stroke Nine. And Stroke Nine was not known at this point. They were young kids, but in Brigantine, for whatever reason, they used to blast their CDs. And there's this amazing song by Stroke Nine that I'll post later, but it's kind of stuck with me the rest of my life. I've always been fond of Stroke Nine and the song Vacuum Bag. Even though Vacuum Bag wasn't playing that day, it's kind of like connected me in so many different things, but I think of Stroke Nine. I think back to being this poor kid from the hood, and all I wanted to do was hit my serves and be left alone. And the motivation to win this tournament I had no right to even be in, and to get in this guy's head, is because somebody wouldn't leave me alone. And I take that as a motto for life. I always like breaking into the circles I'm not supposed to be in. You know, it's become like a metaphor. It's what we have been the whole story, right? Sometimes, remember now that I've advanced to whatever the hell I am, that kid that's playing volleyball at 1 o'clock in the morning, meaning the lawyer that's on his court-appointed case, I'm not going to mock him or her. I want to get him a Gatorade. Wish him well. Because at the end of the day, we're supposed to be a team. But when somebody who has the image of something superior to you kicks dirt in your face, the revenge is really sweet. And because he messed with me, when I was just trying to be left alone, I systematically destroyed his future. I'm proud of that. Anyway, that was Memorial Day Volleyball Tournament Brigantine in the early 90s. I'm telling you. Have a good night, guys.
The proceeding was a paid presentation by McManus and Amadeo PLLC. Listeners of this program should contact their attorney to obtain advice with respect to any particular legal matter. No listener should act or refrain from acting on the basis of information within this program without first seeking legal advice from counsel in the relevant jurisdiction. Only your individual attorney can provide assurances that the information and your interpretation of it is applicable or appropriate to your particular situation. Listening to this program using any associated website or related links or resources does not create an attorney-client relationship between the listener and host, contributors, or contributing law firms. All liability with respect to actions taken or not taken based on the contents of this program are hereby expressly disclaimed. You and your loved ones deserve a criminal defense firm that believes that your life and freedom are worth fighting for. Matt McManus, Bill Amadeo, and the McManus and Amadeo team of attorneys, investigators, and case managers will take the lead with a vast knowledge and legal experience across the state of Michigan to get the best possible result for you. Learn more at McManusAmadeo.com. Schedule a free consultation 24/7 by calling 800-392-7311.